How's that sound? Can you all hear? Good. Okay. Thank you so much, Bernadette. And thank you, hearty souls, for coming out, having driven over from the Comfort Inn, which took an hour. I know what you have gone through to get here. So thank you very much. And I will read to you from, I write stories, I'm told, but they're very, very long and complicated. And so I'm going to read you sort of little bits of a story called Some Other Better Otto. And I'm going to sort of just give you a little list of the players here so that you can situate yourself in the story before I begin. The protagonist, Otto, is a successful lawyer in his 50s, and he has been living for many years with his boyfriend, William. They live in a brownstone in New York, and their upstairs neighbors are a couple named Margaret and Naomi, who have, they're just on their way back from China, where they've gone to adopt a baby. The other people who you're going to hear just glancingly about are Otto's family. His sister Corinne, who's married, and their brother Martin, and their sister Sharon, who is mentally ill but episodically. And so that's everybody that you'll have to know about. And I will just read you some. I don't know why I committed us to any of those things, Otto said. I'd much prefer to be working or reading, and you'll want all the time you can get this week to practice. It's fine with me, William said. I always like to see Sharon, and we'll survive the evening with your... Otto winced. Well, we will, William said, and don't you want to see Naomi and Margaret and the baby as soon as they get back? Everyone always says, don't you want to see the baby? Don't you want to see the baby? But if I did want to see a fat, bald, confused person, obviously I'd have only to look in the mirror. I was reading a remarkable article in the paper this morning about holiday depression, William said. Should I clip it for you? The statistics were amazing. The statistics cannot have been amazing, the article cannot have been remarkable, and I am not depressed. I just happen to be bored sick by these inane waving our little antennae, joining our little paws to, oh, what is the point? Why did I agree to any of this? Well, William said, I mean, this is what we do. Now, I'm going to go forward in the story, but backward in time a bit. Corinne, Otto's sister, has called him to try to convince him and William to come to her Thanksgiving, and also for them to bring Sharon, the disturbed sister. So Otto's on the phone with Corinne. Wesley and I are having it in the city this year, Corinne was saying. No need to come all the way out to the nasty country. A few hours and it will all be over with. Seriously, Otto, you're an integral element. We're keeping it simple this year. This year, Corinne, there have been no other years. You do not observe Thanksgiving. In fact, Otto, we do, and we all used to. Never. When? Can you imagine Mother being thankful for anything? We always celebrated Thanksgiving when Father was alive. I remember no such thing. Oh, Otto, I just feel so sad sometimes to tell you the truth, don't you? It's all going so fast. I'd like to see everyone in the same room once a century or so. I want to see everybody well and happy. I mean, you and Martin and Sharon were my brothers and sister. What was that all about? Don't you remember playing together all the time? I just remember Martin throwing up all the time. You'll be nice to him, won't you, Otto? He's still very sensitive. He won't want to talk about the lawsuit. Have you spoken to Sharon? Well, that's something I wanted to talk to you about, Otto, actually. I'm afraid I might have offended her. I stressed the fact that it was only to be us this year. No aunts or uncles, no cousins, no friends, just us. And husbands or wives, husband and wife or whatever, and children, naturally. But she became very hostile. Assuming William to be whatever, Otto said, why shouldn't Sharon bring a friend if she wants to? William is family. And surely you remember when she brought that person to Christmas? The person with the feet? I wish you'd go by and talk to her in the next few days. She seems to listen to you. Otto fished up a magazine from the floor, one of the popular science magazines William always left lying around, and idly opened it. Wesley and I reach out to her, Corinne was saying, and so does Martin, but she doesn't respond. I know it can be hard for her to be with people, but we're not people, we're family. I'm sure she understands that, Corinne. I hope you do too, Otto. How clearly he could see through the phone line this little sister of his, in her 50s now, the 6-year-old's expression of aggrieved anxiety long etched decisively on her face. In any case, she said, I've called. And yet there was something to what Corinne had said. They had been one another's environs as children. The distance between them had been as great in any important way as it was now, but there had been no other beings close by, no other beings through whom they could probe or illumine the mystifying chasms and absences and yearnings within themselves. They had been born into the arid clutter of one another's behavior, good and bad, their measles, skinned knees, report cards, a barren landscape dotted with clutter. Perhaps the life of the last dinosaurs as they ranged, puzzled and sorrowful, across the comet-singed planet was similar to childhood. It hadn't been a pleasant time, surely, and yet one did have an impulse to acknowledge one's antecedents now and again. Hello, that was us. It still is. Goodbye. I don't know, William said. It doesn't seem fair to put any pressure on Sharon. Heaven forfend, but I did promise Corinne I'd speak with Sharon, and after all, I haven't actually seen her for some time. Well, we could just go have a plain old visit, though. I don't know, urging her to go to Corinne's. I'm not really comfortable with that. Oh, William, phrase, please, jargon. Why is that jargon? Why? How should I know why? Because it is. You can say, I'm uncomfortable about that, or that makes me uncomfortable, but I'm uncomfortable with that is simply jargon. Otto picked up a book sitting next to him on the table and opened it, Relativity for Dummies. Good heavens, he said, snapping the book shut. Obviously, Martin doesn't want to talk about the lawsuit. Why bother to mention that to me? Does she think I'm going to ask Martin whether it's true that he's been misrepresenting the value of his client's stock? Am I likely to talk about it? I'm perfectly happy to read about it in the Times every day, like everybody else. William took the book from Otto and held Otto's hand between his own. They're not really so bad, you know, your family, he said. Sometimes William's consolations were oddly like provocations. Easy for you to say, Otto said. Not that easy. I'm sorry, Otto said, I know. Oh, one could say till one was blue in the face that Christmas was a day like any other. What difference would it make if he and William were to spend that particular day apart, and so on? And yet, steeled by new love in giddy defiance, Otto had arrived at the house with William, to all intents and purposes, on his arm. A tidal wave of nervous prurience had practically blown the door out from inside the instant he and William ascended the front step. And all evening, aunts, uncles, cousins, mother, and siblings had stared at William beadily as if a little bunny had loped out into a clearing in front of them. William's beauty and the fact that he was scarcely 20 had embarrassed Otto on other occasions, but never so searingly. How intelligent he is, Otto's relatives kept whispering to one another loudly, meaning apparently that it was a marvel he could speak. Unlike, the further implication was, the men they'd evidently been imagining all these years. So, Corinne had said in a loud and artificially genial tone, as if she were speaking to an armed high school student, where did you and William meet, Otto? The table fell silent. Otto looked out at the wolfish ring of faces. On Third Avenue, he said distinctly, and returned to his meal. Sorry, he said, as he and William climbed into the car afterward. Sorry to have embarrassed you, sorry to have shocked them. Sorry, 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 but what was I supposed to say? All that interest, the solicitude. The truth is, they've never sanctioned my way of life. Or, alternately, they've always sanctioned it. Oh, what on earth good is it to have a word that means only itself and its opposite? Driving back to the city through the assaultively scenic and demographically uniform little towns, they were silent. Otto glanced at William. No glance was returned. Back in the apartment, they sat for a while in the dark. Tears stung Otto's eyes and nose. He would miss William terribly. It was a mistake, he said. William gestured absently. Well, we had to do it sooner or later. We did? It was as if snow had begun to fall in the apartment, a gentle, chiming, twinkling snow, and sitting there looking at one another silently, it became apparent that what each was facing was his future. Now, I'll skip way ahead in the story, and Otto and William have indeed gone to visit Sharon to try to persuade her to come to Thanksgiving, and she's been showing some signs of being not all that well, and all of them are sitting and having tea, and Otto was kind of thinking about her. Her professors had been astonished by her leaps of thought, by the finesse and elegance of her insights. She arrived at hypotheses by sheer intuition and with what eventually one of her mentors described as an almost alarming speed. She was like a dancer, he said, out in the cosmos, springing weightlessly from star to star. Drones, merely brilliant, crawled along behind with laborious proofs that supported her assertions. Otto himself was so literal-minded he couldn't understand the simplest scientific or mathematical formulation. Plain old electricity, for example, with its amps and volts and charges and conductivity. Metaphors, presumably. Metaphors to describe some ectoplasmic tiger in the walls, just spoiling to shoot through the wires the instant the cage door was opened and out into the bulb. And molecules? What on earth were people talking about? If the table was actually just a bunch of swarming motes bound to one another by nothing more than some amicable commonality of form, then why didn't your teacup go crashing through it? But from the time she was tiny, Sharon seemed to be in kindly, lighthearted communion with the occult substances that lay far within and far beyond the human body. It was all as easy for her as reading was for him. She was a creature of the universe. And how hospitable and correct she'd made the universe seem when she spoke of even its most rococo and far-fetched attributes. The only truly pleasurable moments at the family dinner table were those rare occasions when Sharon would talk. He remembered one evening, she would have been in grade school, pink barrettes held back her hair. She was speaking of holes in space. Holes in nothing. No, not in nothing, Sharon explained patiently, in space. And the others, older and larger, laid down their speared meat and listened, uncomprehending and entranced, as though to distant, wordless singing. Perhaps, Otto sometimes consoled himself, they could be forgiven for failing to identify the beginnings. How could the rest of them, with their ordinary intellects, have followed Sharon's rapid and arcane speculations, her penetrating apperceptions, closely enough to identify with any certainty the odd associations and disjunctures that seemed to be showing up in her conversation? In any case, at a certain point, as she wandered out among the galaxies, among the whirling particles and ineffable numbers, something leaked in her mind, smudging the text of the cosmos, and she was lost. When their taxi approached the hospital on that first occasion, Sharon was dank and electric with terror. Her skin looked like wet plaster. Otto felt like an assassin as he led her in, and then she was ushered away somewhere. The others joined him in the waiting room, and after several hours had the opportunity to browbeat various doctors into hangdog temporizing. Many people got better, didn't they? Had only one episode, didn't they? Led fully functioning lives. Why shouldn't Sharon be part of that statistic? She, who was so able, so lively, so sweet, so, in a word, healthy. When would she be all right? That depended on what they meant by all right, one of the doctors replied. We mean by all right what you mean by all right, you squirrely bastard, Wesley had shouted, empurpling. Martin paced, sizzling and clicking through his teeth, while Otto sat with his head in his hands. But the fateful, brutal, meaningless diagnosis had already been handed down. Now Otto is coming out of his reverie. Sharon brings him out. Was there something you wanted to see me about? Sharon asked. Powerful beams of misery intersected in Otto's heart. Was it true? Did he always have to have a reason when he called Sharon? Did he never just drop in to say hello? Your brother's here in an ambassadorial capacity, William said. I'm just here for the cake. Ambassadorial? Sharon looked alarmed. Oh, it's only Thanksgiving, Otto said. Corinne was hoping. I was hoping. Otto, she said, I can't. I just can't. I don't want to sit there being an exhibit of robust good health or non-contaminatingness or the triumph of the human spirit or whatever it is that Corinne needs me to illustrate. Just tell them everything is okay. Otto looked at his cake. William was right. This was terribly unfair. Well, I don't blame you, he said. I wouldn't go myself if I could get out of it. If you had a good enough excuse, she said. I only... But of course it was exactly what he had meant. he had meant that Sharon had a good enough excuse. Tell Corinne I'm all right, she said. Otto started to speak again, but stopped. Otto, please. Sharon looked at her hands, folded in her lap. It's all right. And now I'm going to skip the part of the story in which everything happens. This very long, sort of complicated Thanksgiving. And afterwards, Otto and William are in a taxi going home. You're right, as always, Otto said in the taxi later. They're no worse than anyone else's. They're all awful. I really don't see the point in it. Just think, garden, 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 two happy people, and it could have gone on forever. They knew, they'd been told, but they ate it anyway. And from there on out, family, shame, fear, jobs, mortality, envy, murder. Well, William said brightly, and sex. There's that, Otto conceded. In fact, William said, you could look at both family and mortality simply as byproducts of sexual reproduction. I don't really see the point of sexual reproduction either, Otto said. I wouldn't stoop to it. Actually, that's very interesting, you know, William said. They think that the purpose of sexual reproduction is to purge the genome of harmful mutations. Of course, they also seem to think it isn't working. Then why not scrap it, Otto said. Why not let us divide again, like our dignified and immortal forebear, the amoeba? Well, William said, I suppose sexual reproduction is fairly entrenched by now. People aren't going to give it up without a struggle. And besides, family confers certain advantages as a social unit, doesn't it? No. What advantages? Oh, rudimentary education, protection. Besides, it's broadening. You meet people in your family you'd never happen to run into otherwise. And now we're going to skip the other part of the story where everything happens. And I'm just going to read you a little bit. The upstairs neighbors, Naomi and Margaret, have returned from China with the baby, and they brought the baby downstairs for William and Otto to see. Margaret rolled out a little white quilt on the rug. Plunked down on it, the baby sat wobbling with an expression of surprise. Look at her, William said. Here's hoping, Margaret said, raising her glass. So, marvelous. Humans were born, they lived, they glued themselves together in little clumps, and then they died. It was no more, as William had once cheerfully explained, than a way for genes to perpetuate themselves. The selfish gene, he'd said, quoting, probably detrimentally, someone, you were put on Earth to fight for your DNA. Let the organisms chat, let them talk. Their voices were as empty as the tinklings of a player piano. Let the organisms talk about this and that. It was what, as William had so trenchantly pointed out, this particular carbon-based life form did, just as its cousin, according to William, the roundworm, romped ecstatically beneath the surface of the planet. Otto tried to intercept the baby's glossy, blurry stare. The baby was actually attractive for a baby and not bald at all, as it happened. Hello, Otto thought to it. Let's you and I communicate in some manner far superior to the verbal one. The baby ignored him. Whatever she was making of the blanket, the table legs, the shod sets of feet, she wasn't about to let on to Otto. Well, see if he cared. William was looking at him. So what was he supposed to do? oh, all right, he'd contribute, despite his current clarity of mind. And how was China, he asked. Was the food as bad as they say? Naomi looked at him blankly. Well, I don't know, actually, she said. Honey, how was the food?
The food,
Margaret said. Not memorable, apparently. The things people have to do in order to have children, Otto said. We toyed with the idea of giving birth, Margaret said. That is, Naomi toyed with it. At first, Naomi said, I thought, what a shame to miss an experience that nature intended for us. And I mean, there was this guy at work, or of course there's always... But then I thought, what? What am I, an idiot? I mean, just because you've got arms and legs, it doesn't mean you have to... No, William said, but still, I can understand how you felt.
Have to what?
Margaret said.
I can't, Otto said.
Have to what? Margaret said. I can't understand it, Otto said. I've just never envied the capacity. Others are awestruck, not I. I've never even remotely wished I were able to give birth, and in fact, I've never wanted a baby. Of course, it's inhuman not to want one, but I'm just not human. I'm not a human being. William is a human being. Maybe William wanted a baby. I never thought to ask. Was that what you were trying to tell me the other day, William? Were you trying to tell me that I've ruined your life? Did you want a baby? Have I ruined your life? Well, it's too bad. I'm sorry. I was too selfish ever to ask if you wanted one, and I'm too selfish to want one myself. I'm more selfish than my own genes. I'm not fighting for my DNA. I'm fighting against it. I'm happy as I am, William said. He sat, his arms wrapped tightly around himself, looking at the floor. Who needs more champagne?
You see, Otto said into the tundra of silence William left behind him as he retreated into the kitchen. I really am a monster.
Miles away, Naomi sat blushing, her hands clasped in her lap. Then she scooped up the baby. There, there, she said. But Margaret sat back, eyebrows raised in semicircles, contemplating something that seemed to be hanging a few feet under the ceiling. Oh, I don't know, she said, and the room shuttled back into proportion. I suppose you could say it's human to want a child in the sense that it's biologically mandated, but I mean, you could say that, or you could say it's simply unimaginative, or you could say it's unselfish, or you could say it's selfish, or you could just say, well, I want one. But when you get right down to it, really, one what? Because actually, I mean, well, look at Molly. I mean, actually, they're awfully specific. I think I'll stop right there. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. I think if anybody, I mean, of course, you might want to go back out into the traffic, or I'm told that people might have questions, which I'm very happy to answer. If there are any, I'll tell you anything. But nobody has a question. Oh. All right, thank you very, very much for coming out. Thank you.